Did you know that VA New England Healthcare provides the very best medical care for our nation's heroes? Did you or a loved one serve this great country? You might be eligible for free healthcare. Find out right now by calling 844-VA-CARES. That's 844-VA-CARES. Or visit the VA website at vacares.us. Look, if you or a loved one served this country, get the healthcare you earned and deserve.
Money Movers provides investors with real-time analysis of the stories and the people attracting the attention of markets each day. I'm Carl Quintanilla.
And I'm Sarah Eisen. We'll cover the breaking news and numbers driving stocks and sectors, helping you make critical decisions. Plus, we'll speak with the CEOs, newsmakers, and political leaders playing a role in how your money is moving.
Listen to CNBC's Money Movers free on the Odyssey app.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrecht and Tommy Kester.
Welcome in, everybody. It's Sports Daily here on this Friday. Jacob Albrecht, Tommy Kester, Jad Chambers producing the program as we get you ready for the weekend. A lot to get to on the program today. Happy Friday, Jacob.
Yeah, happy Friday. We're here. We're rocking and rolling. We're going to make some picks. We got Brandon Zinner, TJ Cleland, Paul Savage coming in top of the next hour for us, getting us ready to go. Always a lot of fun on a Friday, reacting to Thursday night football, of course. We'll look ahead to a Chiefs Monday night football game. We'll look ahead to a K-State game against Houston. We'll take you around any of the interesting headlines. You can, of course, get in touch with the program, as you always can, via the IHOP hotline. And that's available to you at 869-1240. It's brought to you by IHOP, where you can celebrate the weekdays, new IHOP house faves, all your favorites for just $6 Monday through Friday. Happy to be here with you, Tommy. How was Halloween? Did you Scrooge it up?
I did. Yeah. I mean, I was only out for a short period of time. You and I were texting this morning. We're both. I don't even want to say we're both under the weather. You've been dealing with a cough. I felt like crap yesterday or last night, at least. And I only trick or treated with my kids for maybe an hour, and then I was done. And you know, we talked about it yesterday. I don't love it, but I didn't feel good either. So I went to bed. I crashed. We're going to see how today goes because I feel a little bit better, but man, I could use the weekend. I need to rest a little bit, I think.
Yeah, I'm not, I don't feel bad at all. I just have this stupid cough. You must have been hopped up. You confused me greatly. So I was just, we were out late trick-or-treating in the neighborhood till, I don't know what time it was, 9 or 9:30.
Yeah.
I looked down and I see a text and you asked me, do you still like the Jets? I was like, they must be getting smashed.
Yeah.
And I don't even know when you sent that. And I look and it was 10-7. And I'm like, what is happening in this game? And then, of course, they go on to win by 11 points.
Yeah.
So I was very confused by that. They did what they needed to do last night on Thursday Night Football. It's interesting. I almost am a little bit more concerned about what we saw from the Texans as far as like bigger picture things than the Jets. The Jets kind of did what I thought they would do, right? Like they're better than their record, certainly. Their defense finally stepped up a little bit. Man, Houston offensive line looked bad.
Yeah.
And that's not a wide receiver problem. That's a problem that, you know, is maybe a little more holistic. But, you know, credit to the Jets. That was one of the more incredible plays you'll ever see from Garrett Wilson. That's the first play, basically, I saw when I turned the game on. But if they crawl back into it, they're not a nothing. And I think Houston, who we thought might be something for sure, is probably in a little more danger than just having wide receivers injured.
Yeah, it's funny because I watched most of the first half. You watched the second half. I fell asleep at halftime. I took NyQuil and I was out. I was done. And when I texted you, if you still like the Jets, they were so bad,
really?
At least in the first half. Like Aaron Rodgers at one point, I think, was 4 of 10 for 14 yards passing. Like, it was awful. They had a touchdown called back because the player that scored the TD, and I wasn't familiar with his name. That was the first time I'd heard him. Malachi Corning, I think it was his name.
Malachi Corley.
I wasn't familiar with Malachi Corley. He dropped the ball before he crossed the goal line. They called that touchdown back in the first half for the Jets. And, you know, the Texans weren't much better, but, man, the Jets looked awful in the first half. So that's when I texted you asking if you still like the Jets. Then I woke up this morning after being dead to the world for 12 hours or whatever, and I saw the Jets had won. And I'm like, what the hell? Like, they looked so bad in the first half.
That's what confused me, because I don't remember liking the Jets. I liked them in the game. Did you mean in that game? Mm. Like that bet?
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. Yeah, because I said the Jets seem like the bet, as wild and wacky as that is, that they would be favored against the Texans just because of the injury to the Texans receivers and the desperation of the Jets. But I got to tell you, from the second half, which is what I watched, the Texans, they better figure something out, because Stroud can't go like that under duress like he did. Their run game is good, but if I'm watching, and again, it's one game on the road, and we don't watch every snap of every game, but I watch a lot of NFL football on Sundays. I would say that, you know, I would not put them over Pittsburgh. I would not put them over Baltimore. I would not put them over Buffalo. I think they have some real work to do, and they're going to have to figure some things out. Maybe Nico Collins will help, but man, CJ Stroud didn't have a prayer last night. He was under fire constantly in that game. And I had heard some things, you know, just sort of watching and listening and reading NFL coverage, that there was real concern about their offensive line. And so I was maybe more, you know, apt to look at it last night, but it did not look good at all. Like, their line is a problem, and we know that's a problem. And they don't have Patrick Mahomes back there. As much as I like C.J. Stroud, they don't have Houdini back there, you know, pulling rabbits out of his hat every other play when you don't have good line play all the time.
Yeah, they also dealt with some pretty big injuries in the first half on that offensive line. Laremy Tunsil, was in under the blue medical tent for a while. Kenyon Green had a shoulder injury that he went back to the locker room. So, you know, they were banged up, especially on that offensive line in the second half. But the biggest injury was Will Anderson hurting that ankle and going down. He, you know, basically, I know that he finished out at least the first half, but that's significant. And depending on what his prognosis is moving forward, you know, I don't know if it's something that's going to, you know, keep him on the sideline moving forward. But, I do think that that's something to definitely keep our eyes on, because he's the straw that stirs the drink for the Texans defensively. And they've got to have him.
They got to have all of them. But I think the point of all of it is how quickly, like, the power structures can shift in the NFL, probably more than any other sport, really. Like, all of a sudden, things can get turned upside down. And that is what has been, to me, the most remarkable thing about the Chiefs being unbeaten, is they have had ample opportunity for that to happen to them based on the injuries that they've dealt with, and it just hasn't. And I don't know, you know, at some point, well, right now, that's a real strength of this team, right? Like, it's one of the most impressive things, if not the most impressive thing that they've done all year. There's staying power in it, but, like, I think Chiefs fans can be appropriately optimistic that they're going to get a lot of their injured players back, and they're going to be in good shape to make some noise as this thing works its way through, as other teams have not been able to overcome some of these significant injuries.
Yeah, that's going to be the key, I think, to all of this, is that, you know, there are a couple of players that the Chiefs have that are going to be working their way back from injury, I would think, you know, relatively soon. Charles Aminihue, I know everybody's been waiting on his, you know, long-awaited return this season, after going down with that knee injury last year. And then I don't know what the overall prognosis is on Juju Smith-Schuster, if this is something that's going to be a chronic hamstring thing that, you know, hampers him throughout the entire season, or if he'll be able to return sooner rather than later. But while the Chiefs, I mean, every team in the NFL, you're gonna be dealing with injuries. Like, that's just a given. It's going to happen. The question then becomes, like, how do you respond to that? And what does the depth look like depending on the position that you're feeling a little bit short in? And that's where, you know, I do think we talked about it earlier this week, where the Chiefs went out and they acquired Josh Uche and what he's going to be able to provide them from a depth perspective, because they are still waiting for Charles Aminihue. And so that kind of solidifies, or at least, you know, helps fortify the depth at edge rush for the Kansas City Chiefs moving forward. You've got to have that depth. You've got to have, you know, the personnel. And so it's not about who gets injured. It's about what you do after the injuries happen. And I think that's really going back to last night's game. That's what the Texans are going to really have to be asking themselves as this week progresses. How are we going to respond to this? Because if we don't have the dudes, then we've got to try to make sure that we do something maybe before the trade deadline on Tuesday or whatever that looks like to fortify that. You and I were, I think, both in agreement, correct me if I'm wrong, that the Texans would be a major player for Nico, or not for Nico Collins, but for Deontay Johnson to help with Nico Collins and Steph Diggs being injured. The Ravens got Johnson. They've got to go and try to find some reinforcements.
At least that it'll make sense. They'll get Collins back. I think Tank Dell's good. I'm far less concerned about that, honestly, than that offensive line for them. Because if they, you know, you just like you envision playing a couple of good pass rushes, including the Chiefs, if you're in the postseason, and that's going to be a problem. Same thing with the Jets last night. You know, and I only watched the second half, but the Jets were impressive and they had a couple of things go their way, certainly. But Aaron Rodgers was making those kinds of throws, managing the clock perfectly late. They were very in tune. There was the drive that they scored the final touchdown to Davante Adams on. Every player was making the right decision. It did not look like a poorly coached team. Breece Hall, inbounds, going out of his way to make sure he was at like inbounds. Like they were executing very well. And we brought this up yesterday. And look, the Jets are far down the list. I'm more interested if they can make a postseason run because I think Aaron Rodgers is always, you know, spooky in the playoffs. But other than the New England loss last week, like again, their losses are on the road to San Francisco when they were much healthier, Denver, on the road to Minnesota, Buffalo, and on the road to Pittsburgh. They have played one of the more difficult schedules in the NFL so far. That was a big win for them last night. Now they've got to follow it up because they'll play two pretty good teams before the bye week in the next 2 weeks, but not like some of the teams they played. They go to Arizona and then they play Indianapolis, then they get a bye. They don't have a ton of schedule relief, so I would say it's still unlikely for them to reach the postseason because their schedule is just terrible. I mean, it's Seattle, Miami, Jacksonville, the Rams, Buffalo, Miami. If Tua's healthy, your only game where they're probably favored, maybe Seattle, for sure Jacksonville, and that's probably about it. So they've got a steep hill to climb. So I would say, you know, if we're saying are they going to make it as of today, I would say the chances are less than 50%. Because of the schedule they still have to play, but it's not as bad as the schedule they've already played. And they have the players. They're one of the more interesting. And I know I say that all the time, but they really are. Look at the plays Garrett Wilson makes, and Davante Adams is there, and Breece Hall's there. The defense looked better last night than it had. Is that sustainable? I don't know. But I think the bigger story out of last night is the Texans, and are they? I think they're further down the rung right now than maybe we thought they were.
Well, I think really what the Jets did last night, and of course, when you move to 3-6 and you snap a 5-game losing streak, you're not totally out of it. A loss would have, I mean, at 2-7, like that's...
They would have been out.
They would have been done. It would have been impossible to come back from and even have a prayer at the playoffs. And I think what would have been obnoxious from my perspective is even at 2-7 and even really not having a prayer for the playoffs, that they're still, like, because they're the Jets and because Aaron Rodgers is there, there still would have been like this made up relevance about them for whatever reason. Now, at least at 3-6, you still have a shot at it. So I'm okay with the conversation surrounding the Jets, even at 3-6. Is it likely they make the playoffs now? No, it's not. Even at 3-6, it's not. It's probably more less likely than it is likely. But I do think that at least you have continued what they did last night to push themselves further into relevancy, which a loss would have completely knocked them out of it. So I'm okay with the discourse continuing to surround the Jets and the intrigue and all of that about what are they going to do? Can they come back? Can they get back into the race? Can they do all of that? I'm okay with that at this point. Had they lost last night, I wouldn't have been. But you're right with the Texans. Like they are, even at 6-3, there are clear concerns that I think need to be addressed internally. And you don't have a lot of time to address them because the deadline is on Tuesday. I would venture to guess that they will be as aggressive as they possibly can be before Tuesday because that window is there. It's open. Even though you have lost your prized acquisition, Steph Diggs, for the season, I think that they will try to be as aggressive as they can.
I think the only urgency for them is the Steph Diggs piece. They're at the beginning part of a window. There's no doubt about that. They got a lot of young players. They've got a lot of young, affordable players for now. They still are, I'm sure, going to leave themselves the ability to be aggressive in free agency after the season. But yeah, they if you look around and the Chiefs are unbeaten and they're doing all this, you can't also not be a realist as an executive and say, but the Chiefs are dealing with a lot too. Like if they're gettable, are they gettable? And I would say if you're, the opposing contenders, you would say, sure they are. Yeah, they're definitely gettable this year. Now they keep winning these games and they're the champs and nobody's betting against them, but don't let the unbeaten record fool you. They've got a lot of injuries and they're dealing with a lot of stuff. So I think all of these teams, and that's where, I don't even know if I don't even really care, quite frankly, if the Jets play themselves back into the postseason. I just think they become a team that you feel like could beat anybody any Sunday. The Texans should still be that. They probably are. They certainly are when they get Nico Collins back. How many of those teams are out there? Because that's what's going to just jack this thing all up, is how many of these teams are actually good teams. And I think, and by good, I just mean capable of winning any game, basically, in the NFL. And how many of them are there in the AFC? It's a lot easier to say how many of them are there not. I think there's three, four, maybe. The Raiders, the Titans, the Jags, and the Patriots. That's probably it. That you're just yeah, that's not a very good team. Everybody else is pretty capable.
Yeah, I think the biggest question for the Jets, and I know it has been, at least during the 5-game losing streak, their defense and the fact that it's been porous and they've given up a ton of yards and points and all of that.
And they gave up a ton of rushing yards again last night.
And Joe Mixon was great. I mean, that was the biggest weapon that DeMeco Ryans had for the Texans last night, was leaning on Joe Mixon. And at least in the first half when I watched, Mixon looked really, really good. But for the Jets,
he stayed good.
But for the Jets, for me, it was, you've got to get Aaron Rodgers up to speed in a game quicker. He's got to get, and maybe that's just the way that it is because he's 40 and it takes a little bit of time to get going in a game. But the first half, he was awful. It's just objectively awful. And so he didn't end the game awful by any means. And Garrett Wilson had a phenomenal catch and all of that. That's great. And the Jets won the game. If it were me, if I were looking at, okay, what can we do if we're the Jets? What do we have to do? Not what can we do, but what do we have to do to continue to play ourselves back into the playoff hunt? We've got to get out to faster starts. We've got to find a way to get Rodgers in a groove earlier in the game as opposed to after halftime, because they're not going to always be able to come back like they were against the Texans last night. That's not realistic. They've got to try to find a way to get going quicker out of the gate.
I agree with that. I think that's going to come through running the ball. If they don't play good defense, they're going to be in trouble. But if you told me that, this is an offense that will rely on the run game and big plays from Aaron Rodgers, I kind of like that, but that only works if you can play.
It really
defense.
Hasn't been their game plan.
I agree. That it ended up being that way last night, yeah. Right? They ran the ball. They had the two big pass plays, and they played better defense. That's what has to be sustainable. The Jets aren't going to be in a team with a 40-year-old quarterback that are going to just consistently be in shootouts, which is what has happened to them. So, can they play that level of defense? Well, they didn't stop the run again yesterday. And when you look okay, they get in somehow to the postseason right now, you look at them in a matchup versus the Ravens or the Chiefs or the Steelers, these teams that can really run the ball. And it's they'd be in big trouble there, but at least they're interesting, which is all we can hope for because it's been such a good storyline. And of course we always root for Breece Hall, but that's Thursday Night Football. Shuffling things up in the AFC certainly gives us a lot to think about as we watch the Chiefs and size everybody up as it pertains to the Chiefs. We'll make some picks later. There's some really good games across the league that we'll pick and do a little more of that as we make our way through. We'll get you caught up on K-State. Tommy and I look ahead to K-State. We've previewed that with some of our insiders. We'll take a final look, give you some final thoughts there as well as we make our way through. On the way out here, I want to tell you that Fall at Crestview Country Club is not slowing down. There's still golf. Of course, there's tennis. And then the club life away from the sports just gets going more and more. There's all kinds of brunch experiences for the holidays. They have a New Year's Eve event. There's youth activities to go with the adult nights. So if you want to go out, have a date night, you can send the kids out to one of the youth activities there. Give Crestview a call. All kinds of memberships. Tell them we sent you from Sports Daily. Tommy and I are members out there. We both love it and couldn't recommend it enough. We'll come back. 869-1240 is the IHOP hotline. It is open in hour number one because we're busy in hour number two making picks and getting you ready for the high school football playoffs later tonight. Don't go away. I'll rock and cast our Sports Daily. Coming right back.
.975 and 1240 KFH.
Welcome back, everybody. Thank you to Prairie Fire Coffee for keeping us fueled up each and every morning here on KFH and across the Odyssey family and networks. Tommy, K-State Houston, afternoon game. Kind of odd for K-State. They've had a weird set of kickoff times, but they get a Saturday afternoon game against Houston. I mean, Houston beat Utah last week. I don't know how much to make of anything with Utah right now. They're not a great offense. Houston's not. I think they probably impressed you just a little bit more going into the Kansas game than they did me. I don't think they're very good. They can't throw the ball. Their quarterback last week, I didn't even heard of this guy, Chris, 6 of 13 for 61 yards. I mean, they ran it better for sure. But, you know, like K-State seems to match up really well against them. I guess I'll put it that way. I love the Cats in this game. I know it's on the road, and I know it comes in the middle of a really crazy portion of the schedule. But I just I feel like this is a terrible matchup for Houston.
The one thing about Houston to, you know, never forget about is that Willie Fritz is a hell of a coach.
He is.
And he's been really good.
He has a history of having K-State's number a
absolutely.
Little bit.
I mean, when he was at Tulane, I mean, they did that. And so he doesn't have the horses, I don't think, overall to compete with Kansas State from top to bottom from a talent perspective this weekend. But don't discount just the way that Fritz can get his guys up and rolling. Now, Kansas, when they played at Arrowhead a couple of weekends ago, the Jayhawks had their number. And really the biggest struggle that Houston had was figuring out the quarterback play. I mean, they went back and forth between two different quarterbacks. And I know that you mentioned, you know, Chris and all of that, but like they basically needed to figure out what they were going to do. I mean, Donovan Smith for the Cougars didn't have a good game against the Jayhawks, but then Zion Chris came in and they like kind of split reps in that Kansas game. But now it does look like it's Chris's job overall. So I don't know exactly the way that will play out for Houston. I mean, I would think that if Willie Fritz is going with the sophomore, that he feels like that gives his team obviously a better chance to be successful in moving the ball and getting first downs and getting into the end zone. I just don't know when you're facing that level of competition with Kansas State, how realistic that is. But keep in mind, again, they did beat Utah. And I know Utah has been, you know, obviously they don't have Cam Rising and they're a shell of their what they thought they would be coming into this season. And Houston did get the win. I would just, if I'm the Wildcats, I would go into this game feeling confident. I would go into this game feeling like we are the better team from top to bottom. But just in the back of your mind, not forgetting that Willie Fritz is the coach and Houston is coming off of a 3-point win against Utah.
I don't think Kansas State's going to overlook Houston. Don't misunderstand, nor do I think they should. I think for me, though, like if Houston is in any world dangerous, the things that they're dangerous for or could be are things that match up well with K-State. So K-State, we know, is doing everything they can to stop running games so that teams will throw the ball. Well, I don't think Houston can throw the ball. So if K-State sells out to stop the run like they have, I think it's a real, real problem for Houston. And the other thing is, if I recall correctly, Jalen Daniels, Houston did a pretty good job stopping the run against Kansas. They did a pretty good job. They did a really good job, I'll say, stopping the run against Utah. So Avery Johnson then could feast to some degree too. We've seen him now. That that chapter of this season for him. Oh, well, can Avery Johnson drop back and throw it a ton? Yeah, he can. We've seen him do it, right? We know that he can. He did it against West Virginia. So I just think it's a really good matchup for K-State stylistically.
Yeah, and it's an opportunity, I think, also for Kansas State, for their defense, if the defense can come out and flex a little bit, because Houston has only exceeded 17 points twice this season. The strength has been defensively for the Cougars. That's really where they've made their hay throughout the year. And so if the Kansas State defense can really shut down what Houston wants to do offensively, and probably I think that a large reason why Willie Fritz went to Chris as the starting quarterback is because he's been a little bit more mobile, or been able to have more success being mobile than Donovan Smith has had this season. If Kansas State can contain Chris, you know, and not let him break free and have space in the secondary and beyond, then it's going to be really, really hard for Houston to exceed that 17-point mark that they've really not been able to get past many times this season. So it is a good opportunity, I think, for Kansas State's defense to once again show that they are solid and they are a successful defensive unit. I think that's really going to be where my eyes are in this matchup, is how well can Kansas State's defense limit anything that Houston wants to do offensively. Then at that point, you don't need to rely super heavily on the arm of Avery Johnson or on the offensive playmakers, because the defense is shutting down Houston.
K-State wants to run the ball. They always want to run the ball. If Houston slows that down, it gets into Avery Johnson. Look, the way that Houston stays in this game is if K-State makes mistakes, right?
Did you know that VA New England Healthcare provides the very best medical care for our nation's heroes? Did you or a loved one serve this great country? You might be eligible for free healthcare. Find out right now by calling 844-VA-CARES. That's 844-VA-CARES. Or visit the VA website at vacares.us. Look, if you or a loved one served this country, get the health care you earned and deserve.
Money Movers provides investors with real-time analysis of the stories and the people attracting the attention of markets each day. I'm Carl Quintanilla.
And I'm Sarah Eisen. We'll cover the breaking news and numbers driving stocks and sectors, helping you make critical decisions. Plus, we'll speak with the CEOs, newsmakers, and political leaders playing a role in how your money is moving.
Listen to CNBC's Money Movers free on the Odyssey app.
That will be basically the BYU formula, except that Houston's not nearly as good as BYU. So, Kate, this isn't a game where, like Kansas, I thought, you know, K-State and Kansas were going to go blow for blow. That's what happened, right? No, I don't think that's what's going to happen here. K-State will have to make mistakes if Houston's going to stay in this game. So, you know, you've got a 19-year-old quarterback. You got to always be aware of that. But I do think even though Houston's been much better against the run, they'll still try to run the ball. They would still like to do that. That's where we look at this game, and we'll make picks and stuff from, you know, from the bets and all that stuff. This isn't one, and I've been more on the K-State over this year for sure than the unders. This isn't going to be one of those games for me. Right now, it sits at 45.5. I think the under is more likely here. So I don't know yet if I'm going to actually put money on that. I'm definitely putting money on K-State in the spread, and I've said that not to spoil the picks or anything coming up in just a little bit. But I love the number. I don't love the over-under, but I would lean under. And that's probably the first time this year I've thought about an under for K-State in the way they're designed, but I do think that probably if they get to have their way, that's the way this game's going to go. They just don't want you get the luxury of not having to take big risks in this game. You can play pretty vanilla in this game and you should be fine.
Yeah, and I think that really with the Wildcats, I think that they'll be able to be successful at doing this, but controlling the ball, you know, controlling possession time, that's going to be key, I think, because the more that they, just basically can push around Houston defensively, I think especially that's going to play into their benefit. You mentioned the key for Kansas State is to limit the mistakes. And while that's true, I think the key to Kansas State not only winning, but covering the number is to limit. I mean, I think if they can get three and outs fairly consistently out of Houston's offense and the ball just continuously comes back to Kansas State, then at that point it's I don't want to say it's ever going to be an easy game for the Wildcats, but that's going to be the most likely recipe for big time success in this matchup, because if they can keep Houston from moving the ball at all and keeping drives alive and that sort of thing, then the ball will just constantly be back in the hands of Kansas State. Even if they're not scoring on every drive, even if they're not getting into the end zone on every drive, if they just control the ball, control the time of possession, all of that, they're going to absolutely feast on Houston and just wear them down. I think that that's what I'm looking at more than anything else. And you know, it wouldn't shock me one bit if at the end of this game tomorrow we see a time of possession split somewhere around like a 2-to-1 ratio. Like, I think Kansas State will hold on to the ball and have it about two times more than Houston does. And if that doesn't happen, if Houston ultimately wins the time of possession battle, that's when the game starts to get a whole lot closer.
Yeah, so the danger in the mistakes and all these things is that for Kansas State, and this is the part I don't want to overlook, like, this is a game capable of being weird if for no other reason than they had to go play a late game at Colorado on the road. They had to go play a late game at West Virginia on the road. They played a late game against Kansas back home. Now they're back on the road, right? So three out of your last four games have been road games. The time is different than it has been for almost a month now. And you have a bye week next week that you feel like is this point of the season for you to catch your breath with all of that. So that we know that that's dangerous in college football, especially when we're talking about a road conference game. And Houston isn't a nothing burger. They beat Utah last week. It just, stylistically, if you're K-State, to me, you like, don't overthink this one. Get in there, dominate the lines of scrimmage, run the ball if you can, and let Avery Johnson just, you know, be efficient, if nothing else. They shouldn't need to do more than that. And that's why I think they'll be fine. But yeah, let's not misunderstand all the things that can make college football games weird, and the weirdness of, you know, the locations and the times on their schedule. The last month, it's been a month, is something to watch. I mean, you know, slow start kind of a thing is out there. But we'll get more into it. We'll get Brandon and TJ and Paul's thoughts on it. I would betcha that nobody's taken Houston. Which is interesting and always a little bit dangerous and scary. But we'll do that in our picks next segment. You've got time to call before we get busy with all of those things at 869-1240. You've got a chance to win some HTO right now as well. A free iced tea, sweet or unsweet, and iced or hot coffee. And Tommy, just out today, just unrolled, just dropping the new peppermint mocha.
Oh, boy.
Holiday drinks are rolling in. Peppermint
that time of
mocha.
Year.
You can get one of those. I'm sure it's delicious. I have not tried it yet, but I've heard very good things from the staff who have. You can text the keyword tea to the short code 20357 right now to win a free iced tea, free coffee. You can enter once per day. Message and data rates apply. Good for any of the Wichita Metro locations. Good luck, everybody. We'll come back. We'll wrap up hour number one right after this. Welcome back in, everybody. It is Sports Daily. We'll make some picks and get into some football fun in the next hour, including the high school football playoffs, which begin, well, they began last night. They begin in earnest tonight, the opening round. Tommy, the Chiefs injury report first comes out yesterday. Everything's a day behind. Normally we get that on Wednesdays. This week we get it on a Thursday. A couple interesting things in there, I think, this week. Juju Smith-Schuster did not practice. I would guess that means he's not playing. Rick pointed out a little while ago on the video stream that he thinks they're just being cautious with him. Let him get healthy. Absolutely the right thing to do with Juju. No need to make this a lingering issue if you can avoid it. The other one that's pretty interesting is Michael Dana is back practicing. Limited capacity, but he was back out there. So maybe they can get him back soon. I don't know. Like, Uche's going to be a factor in the game, I would think, as a pass rusher. I know Spags' defenses are complicated, but you'd think he'd get in. They're going to have some pass rush reinforcements because Minshew is still not even on the practice report at all. But at some point, he'll come back, we think. They'll be pretty deep at that position. And that's going to be a pretty big strength, I think, for Spags at some point.
It's going to be interesting to know how that depth chart pans out once everybody is healthy and back, assuming that that happens, because you would then have, correct me if I'm wrong, but you'd have five active pass rushers. And to me, that would seem like maybe Felix Anudike, who's almost the odd man out.
I think it'll rotate. I think if Uche is what he was in 22, you'll probably see more of a like Karloftis and Uche most of the time.
Yeah.
But I think it's far more likely that these guys rotate a lot and they're just fresh.
Because you're talking after it. If everybody is healthy, correct me if I'm wrong again, but you're talking Karloftis, Uche, Aminihue, Dana, and Felix Anudike Uzomah would be the five.
That's what I've got in my brain, yes.
So, you know, I do think that, yeah, from a rotation perspective, that makes a lot of sense. I just wonder, is this, I know it's building depth. I know that's, you know, checking one box of why you acquire Uche. I think it also could be a little bit of an indication that FAU is not panning out the way that they want him to pan out.
There's no question about that. Yeah, I don't think there's any question. But I do think you've got like a best case scenario of Uche just being awesome, right? But a worst case scenario, you've just got some depth there when healthy. And that's a good thing too, because, you know, everybody, freshness matters, right? We know that for pass rushers. And we've seen teams do this. It's interesting. You know, Spags is blitzing a lot and utilizing that. But if you remember back to like those great Giants defenses, those were great defensive fronts. I don't think those were like heavy blitz teams because like what was the old book on Tom Brady, right? If you blitz him, he'll kill you.
Yeah.
But why did he struggle so much against Spags? Because they could generate the pass rush with only the front four.
Right.
So they didn't need to blitz. And I don't think that was as big a part of those old defenses. So it will be interesting to see Spags, who might have the league's best defense right now. And if he gets this depth, does he back off of the blitzing at all? Does he integrate it in? It's part of his brilliance and part of why he's so good at what he does is because it looks different. Like there's not one method to his madness, which is probably what drives offensive coordinators crazy. But having that tool in his tool belt to potentially not need to blitz as much, right? Because he's generating more pressure with the front is pretty interesting to think about.
It's also less about the amount of times that Spags blitzes, and it's more about the timing of when he does bring the blitz.
Well, sure, yeah.
That's always what has made Spags so brilliant, especially in this role, in this tenure with the Chiefs, is he seems to time out when he's bringing people in a blitz perfectly. I can't think of a lot of different times where he's sent a blitz when he shouldn't, and then it ends up burning the Chiefs. I'm sure it's happened, but really it's kind of few and far between, I would imagine. And it helps when you have the personnel to not have to rely on that, to not have to lean on it all the time, because you do have, and historically they have had, some game wreckers on the front four, notably Chris Jones, where you don't always have to bring that blitz, and it provides so much of a, you know, overall step up from what a lot of other teams are dealing with in the front four, where you do feel like, I'm sure other defensive coordinators feel like, the only way that we're going to have success is to bring extra players because we don't have strength in our front four, and that hasn't been the Chiefs.
Yeah, it's it also helps the secondary, which is going to be a big deal and a probably bigger factor as they make their way to a trade deadline. I'm certain it will come to pass without them acquiring, although I wouldn't put it out of, you know, don't put it out of the question with Brett Veach and the way he's been operating this year. The Juju thing, we can go back to that for just a minute here. I'm fine with D-Hop there putting Juju on ice for a while. I mean, like for a while. Juju can really help this team. He ain't going to help anybody if he's in and out of games dealing with a hamstring. At this point now with D-Hop, like I am fine with them not doing anything with him. If he comes to you on like this Monday and says, I feel great, I feel 100%, I'm saying, that sounds great, can't wait to have you. You're going to still miss the next two games. Like, we can't have you coming out of games with hamstring injuries. We can't have these little nagging things. Like, if we're going to have you, we got to be able to have you. So I think that's the right way to play Juju, is to just be ultra safe. Now, if something else happens and they lose more depth, maybe you amp that up a little bit. But until then, with D-Hop there now and the way he looked last week, I got no pressure to rush Juju back at all.
I'm okay with that, and I think it's also because of, while the Chiefs don't have a really high ceiling on their depth at wide receiver outside of Juju, like the guys that would get the reps if Juju's on ice, there a couple of them are at least relatively consistent, namely Justin Watson. And so if Watson ends up being, you know, more of a volume guy while Juju's on the shelf, okay. He's never going to really excite you. He's never really going to make you, you know, feel outstanding, but he'll be fine. It's serviceable. He's always been serviceable. It'd be different if they didn't have, anybody to fill that role. You know, you might be tempted at least to rush him back as quickly as possible. But knowing that D-Hop is getting, you know, acclimated to the offense, knowing that Xavier Worthy can still be, you know, a dynamic type receiver, and then, oh, by the way, you also have got, you know, a Justin Watson that can be serviceable. Okay, like, that's fine. You can keep Juju on ice for as long as you need to.
And you get to be 7-0, so you have wiggle room and can afford to take the risks and all those things too, because they can, because they haven't been beaten yet, and they have games in hand here. When the Super Bowl is the only goal, you can do things maybe a little bit differently than you would have in the past. I'm curious, speaking of wide receivers, like, I'm pretty curious to see if Worthy has that moment where he becomes a bigger part of the offense this year. When they first drafted him, if we go way back and when we thought Hollywood and Rice and all these guys would be there, I always thought Worthy would be like not a huge part of the offense this year. They've needed him to be now. I just wonder, like, is he going to be able to take that step up too this season? Because that would be something that they could use as well. But Travis Kelce's back. It just no need to rush Juju back.
I'm okay with that. I'm all right. You know, things may change, and obviously from game to game, depends on, you know, how healthy you are and how banged up you are and all of that. But for right now, you know, like, for instance, this game coming up on Monday, which I know we'll have more about after the weekend, but this game on Monday Night Football against the Bucks, do you need Juju to win the game? No. I think you have to go through that process week by week with the personnel that you have and say, do we need this guy to win this game? And at least for right now with Juju Smith-Schuster, the answer is no. That might change, by the way, when they go to Buffalo. Like, things could change pretty significantly between now and then. Like, you might want to have him for the Buffalo game, but I think you have to do that exercise week by week. And right now for this game on Monday night, I would say no.
Yeah, I would say no too. You're going to lean into your defense in that Bucs game. There's no doubt about that. You're going to lean into your defense, and you're going to let them guide you the rest of the way. All right, we're going to take a break. We're going to make some picks when we come back. We've got three college games. We've got three NFL games to get to. And then we've got to talk high school football playoffs. It's a jam-packed hour number two. Brandon Zinner, TJ Cleland, Paul Savage, and I will join. I'll be hitting the road, but I'll still be making picks. So we'll be right back. Don't go anywhere. Let's help everybody make a little money or have some bragging rights and all of these things. We're coming right back. Don't go away. Sports Daily on a Friday, everybody.
Did you know that VA New England Healthcare provides the very best medical care for our nation's heroes? Did you or a loved one serve this great country? You might be eligible for free healthcare. Find out right now by calling 844-VA-CARES. That's 844-VA-CARES. Or visit the VA website at vacares.us. Look, if you or a loved one served this country, get the healthcare you earned and deserve.
You gotta take a listen to this. It's Squawk Pod.
That's right. CNBC's flagship business news show is a podcast, Squawk Pod.
This is CNBC Control 2.
It is not just the show, folks.
It might be even better because it's only audio.
Join me, Katie Kramer, as I take you inside the Squawk Box control room and beyond the headlines of our TV broadcast with Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin every weekday.
Roll alpha.
Listen to CNBC's Squawk Pod free on the Odyssey app.